Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE World Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend's edition. This weekend show, we're going to focus, again, trying to make some sense of what's going on in these volatile markets. Big picture in terms of, are we back in a bull market? Should we still be bearish? These questions seem to be getting a lot of mixed answers from a lot of our guests. And then in the back half of the show, we're going to switch a little bit more over to the resource sector, especially in terms of the precious metals. Just as a note, please be sure to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates posted throughout the week on our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Please subscribe, share, and comment within those platforms as well to help get the word out and grow our audience. We appreciate all the support that all of you, our listeners, give us. Without further ado, let's get into this weekend show. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, it's been a little over a month since we last had you on. We should mention that we are recording this weekend show on Wednesday, right after the markets started to drop on the back of a bad bond auction. Markets broadly have been volatile, though. If you consider that the S&P went down 20% in a month and a half and then up 20% in a month and a half, not back to all-time highs, but that's crazy volatility during this recent rebound. Does seem like we've had a lot more people, again, join the bullish side. There are gains to be had in a lot of different sectors, but it brings up that question, did we all get a little over our skis in this sell America trade? A lot of this was self-inflicted, but at the same time, this pain can last for other countries, how they view the U.S. So Mike, that question, the sell America trade, is it behind us? Did we make too much of it?
Yeah, you know, it has been a crazy environment, and thanks for having me back on to kind of get caught up with where things stand and sort of what I'm seeing out there. I think, you know, the walk back that we've seen from the Trump administration on a lot of the tariffs, the worst of the tariffs. I mean, you remember that chart that they held up at the Rose Garden ceremony with all those numbers and, you know, we're tariffing small islands in the Pacific and Atlantic, you know, and things like that. Those numbers just kind of spooked the markets considerably because they looked a lot larger, a lot higher than what people were expecting. A lot of that's been walked back, and now kind of the expectation is it's back to, you know, throw a bunch of bluster at the market and then ultimately make, you know, some kind of deal down the road that dials a lot of that back. You know, that's that part of the crisis or whatever that provoked the big sell-off in April and then the big rebound on the walk back. That part of it's kind of over, but now the bigger issue. Now, I shouldn't say over, but at least, you know, it's gone from sort of a five-alarm fire to a two-alarm fire. The bigger issue for this market now, I think, is the broader deterioration in the U.S. fiscal position, growing budget deficits, growing debt loads, no sort of political will on either side of the aisle, Republican or Democrat, and, you know, Republican administration or Democratic administration to do anything about it except lip service. And that's what's starting to really spook the markets. I mean, it's interesting as part of the tariff fall, one of the issues that came out of that for the U.S. bond market and U.S. interest rates was that if you're not recycling a bunch of trade surpluses or you're not buying a bunch of foreign goods from countries like China and elsewhere in Asia, and they're not taking that money and buying your U.S. treasuries with it, if something breaks that kind of sort of symbiotic, you know, they send us stuff, we send them money, they send it back to us by buying our bonds. If that process gets disrupted, there's less demand for bonds, therefore interest rates go up. So that was sort of the bond market implication of Trump's tariff plans and so on. But now on top of that, you have things like the negotiations right now in the U.S. House, and depending what comes out of that, eventually the Senate, this quote unquote big, beautiful bill that the president would like to see passed. The issue is that, you know, it has some Medicaid spending cuts in it, but when you factor in the impact of extending some tax cuts, potentially adding to them, and those spending cuts not being enough really to move the needle as much as people would like to see, I mean, you know, independent analysts are saying this is a $3 billion almost budget buster in terms of additional deficits between now or over the next 10 years. So, you know, so you're throwing that into the market that they're trying to get this thing passed. That's riling up bond traders. And on top of that, you had the Moody's downgrade last Friday. Now, is Moody's a day late or potentially 10 years late and a buck short? Sure. I mean, the ratings agencies always are. But what's interesting is that it's sort of being thrown on top of everything else. I kind of describe it as lighter fluid on top of a fire that was already, underway or kind of smoldering and so on. So it's not that, Moody's downgrade equals sell a bunch of bonds and drive rates up. It's more that the market was already worried. Global investors were already worried about U.S. debt, U.S. deficits. On top of that, you get this downgrade. And oh, by the way, we're going to try and add, do some bill that's going to add $3 trillion more to the deficit. So, it's not the downgrade specifically. It's that it just adds to all these other concerns that were already out there. And it comes amidst, again, this sort of sell America trade that's been going on for months. It's been U.S. stocks underperforming, foreign stocks outperforming, U.S. bonds going down in price, rates going up, and money rotating overseas, the U.S. dollar going down, and things like gold and silver rallying. And even, just today, as we're speaking, or earlier this week, by the time this airs, Bitcoin tagging an all-time high. So, you have to look at these things, I think, in the big picture, sort of with a holistic view, and say, what explains all these different markets doing all these similar or different things? And it's all part of that general theme, that concern that the US isn't getting its fiscal house in order. On top of that, volatility is going up because US policy making is much more slapdash. The ter side effect of the tariffs could be to mean less money is recycling back into US assets, and it's all part of those big trends. So I think, I don't think this is the start of some huge new bear market. I don't think this is kind of like, a 2007 moment ahead of the great financial crisis, or a 1999, 2000 moment ahead of the NASDAQ crash. But I do think you have to be much more selective. I mean, I do think you've got to narrow your focus. You got to kind of pick and, whatever sort of metaphor you want to use, pick and choose your battles. Use sort of a rifle approach, not a shotgun. I could go on with those metaphors, but the point being, as an investor, this isn't something, I think fewer chips on the table, a little less aggressiveness, zero in on certain themes and sectors and subsectors that work, and just recognize that it's a riskier environment, it's a more volatile environment, and that kind of environment, you don't go crazy.
Yeah, Mike, I think that's a great summary of the lay of the land. And it's interesting with the Moody's downgrade and with some of the recent press about the swelling deficit and the fiscal side of the U.S. I mean, that's been a problem for many administrations. It's been growing. We've been talking about the debt bubble growing and becoming unsustainable for over a decade, it seems like. But at this kind of an environment, a couple of years ago, your message was to be boring and to go with the safe havens. Then it shifted a couple of years ago to be bold. Now you're saying be more selectively bold and to pick your spots. So if you're using that rifle approach and if you're going in for certain areas, it seems like there's a rotation out of maybe some of the mega cap tech and into other sectors. What sectors are you being selectively bold in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that selectivity or selective term is very important. I think I've been a bull on precious metals and equities related to that for some time. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to note that when you have gold blast up to 3,500, when you have silver look like it might be starting to break out, when you have platinum that, just had its best single day since in like what, 3 years or something, that's telling you that you're seeing this rotation into metals as, an alternative to bonds, a safe haven in times of more political volatility and so on. And I don't think that, and as a dollar insurance play, and as a central bank reserve play. So all the, as bullish as I was about the sector before, I'm very bull. I'm even more so now. And I think for the rest of this year and beyond, we did take some froth out of the market because we blew past 3,500 US in gold and then pulled back. We're sort of consolidating those gains. But I don't think that was kind of a blow off top for the end of the whole bull market. I think we're just going to ultimately need to consolidate for a while before a new leg up. So I like that. I think there's, some defense, not necessarily defensive, but defense type stocks. I mean, whether it's European countries spending more on defense, given the sort of drawback of, or potential drawback in NATO and what's going on there with the Trump administration, longer term, that you're going to see those countries spending more. You're going to see Taiwan and some of these other places that are afraid of China spend more. So, defense looks like an attractive place to be. I always kind of say you got to invest for the world you have, not the one you want. And I think Unfortunately, or what have you, this is going to be a more uncertain and dangerous geopolitical environment. So that's something to look at. There's part subsectors of this kind of industrial market and even financials where you've got looser credit stand or looser oversight, bank oversight, regulatory oversight. I think that's why that sector's done pretty well. So there's some financials you can look at. Those are the kind of, and bargains in energy, traditional energy, and even renewables. I think, that's been a beaten down sector. There's concerns that OPEC oversupply and drill baby drill is going to, lead to some supply glut. But in reality, I think the sector is more disciplined than it was in the past. They kind of learned their lesson during the shale oil, boom and bust. So I don't think, US producers are going to be flooding the market with oil. So I think, there's some bargains there. So those are a few things I'd be looking at for different reasons. But you can see, like, again, it's not a buy everything because A, B, and C macro forces are going to drive almost everything up. It's more of, hey, I can find a story that I think makes sense in this subsector. And by the way, I can find another story that I think makes sense in another subsector. It's definitely more selective.
Let's talk a little bit about that gold trade then, compared to the markets. If you do see a selective environment, maybe not that crash scenario that some people were touting for US markets, do we still see that inverse correlation between gold, even the gold equities that have more followed gold, compared to the broad averages?
Yeah, I think, look, it's not a surprise to me that precious metals have outperformed equities. I think that it's something I kind of predicted and expected and said so publicly and on in our previous conversations. I don't really think that ends. I mean, there's so many different things I think precious metals do for you in this environment. They're insurance against a declining dollar that is, part of the sell America trade. Plus, frankly, the administration wants a lower currency. Look at what happened to the Taiwan dollar the other day. Look what happened in South Korea. It's clear that there's wink nod negotiations, or probably at least unstated desire from the Trump administration to have a weaker dollar and to rebalance the US-Asia trade relationship by driving the dollar lower against currencies in that region. So that's a reason to put more money into gold, silver, precious metals generally, and related equities. The central bank reallocation of reserves. I mean, there's a lot of things, and just volatility insurance. There's a lot of things that kind of line up behind that part of the market that I don't think are short term or, couple of month type things. They're, several quarters to a few years kinds of things. And I think, as a result, it's not surprising to see precious metals do what they do. It also is my expectation that they continue to do that and that the bull market continues to run for some time. So that's probably one of the spaces in the market that looks extremely promising to me.
Mike, how are you looking at something like silver, which is part precious but also part industrial? Same thing with copper, where it's mostly industrial use, because the narrative has been, oh boy, we're getting ready for a giant contraction or recession or possibly a depression. And the sky was falling really just about 6 weeks ago. Now people are unsure of whether that's going to happen. Are you in the camp that we see that big contraction where it hurts commodities, or are we in a reflationary trade where it actually helps commodities?
No, I don't think we're in a deflation economic crash, get out of anything sensitive to the economy type market. I really don't. I think if anything, you're going to have parts of the world like China that are going to respond to US pressure, US trade rebalancing, whatever, by trying to stimulate, right? I mean, that's been sort of the Chinese economic playbook for some time, and they're not going to sit here and just, take the abuse from the Trump administration or what have you without doing anything. So I think if anything, you might see some kind of, reflationary spending there. You have other parts of the world that are going to be, opening up their checkbooks a little bit more. I mean, again, things like even Europe defense spending, I mean, that's going to cost a lot. There's going to be demand for things that go into all the materials that they're going to be buying and spending on. So I think the move that we saw in platinum is noteworthy. I think silver is really kind of on the cusp of a breakout. I know it's been a little bit of a wait for Godot type situation there, but I think that it's got enough gas in the tank from the broader precious metals trend and even from some stimulative type spending trend that, yeah, I think silver follows, and I've said that for a while and it hasn't. So, I'm going to obviously state the obvious there. I've expected it to follow and break out. It hasn't yet, but, it looks promising to me.
Mike, if we do see silver spike, and also this other theme that's running along my head is the junior stocks also catching a bid, especially in the precious metals space. That can happen end of cycle. Not saying that that definitely marks the top, because it can go on for years if that bullish scenario keeps playing out and you can see some massive gains in those smaller sectors like silver, like the junior stocks. How do we go about understanding when a top might be, or understanding just what stage of a bull market we're in, as we have seen really the playbook play out perfectly, where the metal move, the majors move, the mid-tiers move, and now the juniors are starting to move?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, I always kind of say it's like that old, what, the Supreme Court thing, you know, like with pornography, I'll know it when I see it, or obscenity, I'll know it when I see it. You know, I think that there are certain things that is, it's not necessarily like a quantifiable hard and fast rule. You know, I will sell junior miners when GDXJ goes up X percent for X number of days or something like that. It's more of, do I see, you know, true euphoria, people talking about this stuff on television all the time, you know, chunk gains day after day, week after week, and so on. Those kinds of things are the I don't know, you know, the kind of stuff you saw sort of in the 2010, 2011 cycle, where, you know, silver, you know, blasted the moon, and junior miners were, you know, just this euphoria, the euphoria trade was running through that. I wouldn't say that we're seeing that yet. I mean, I'd say there's optimism. I'd say there's more adoption, certainly, than we saw earlier in the cycle. I mean, you know, we were talking before, like, hey, I remember it was kind of a common question. Okay, when are these stocks finally going to move? You know, and that was sort of the thing we were all watching and worried about. Now we're seeing it, you know, again, in the short term, when gold sort of blasted through 3,500, reversed, dropped 100, you know, that one day, I think it was something like a $200 price range from high to low. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, shorter term stuff that if I were trading the futures market, I would make me kind of cautious, you know, pull back for a little bit to consolidate. But in terms of the equities, I don't wake up or turn on the TV and see a new mining company on the New York Stock Exchange raising money every day, or, you know, other exchanges. I don't see sort of a, you know, absolute euphoric action in a lot of these companies. So, I mean, it's certainly the gains are nice, but I don't think what we're seeing is just willy-nilly buying up of every, you know, lousy company that makes up some story and doesn't have the, you know, the drilling results, acreage, or whatever to stand behind it. I don't think you're seeing that kind of behavior. So I think this is, you know, bull market behavior, but not euphoric. So I wouldn't give up on it yet, I guess, is kind of how I'd summarize it.
Well, Mike, you brought up the energy space too, and I think it'd be nice to dive into that. It has pulled back. It's definitely not euphoric in oil and nat gas right now, but it could be a great time to be buying this dip, because it seems like some of the concerns about OPEC and, you know, the U.S. flooding the market with oil are maybe a little overstated. How are you looking at the traditional energy space?
Yeah, I mean, again, with the commodity not cooperating, are you really going to see, you know, great outsized gains in a sector like that? I mean, no, you're just not. So it's more, you're kind of, you know, so I don't think it's a sector that I would go overboard in targeting, but I do think that there are some bargains being created. I do think that it's, you know, it's a sector that is not going away, the whole traditional oil versus renewables. I don't think it's going to be something where this is all just, you know, going to go to pot and so on. So I think it's something you want to have some exposure to. You want to sort of buy here and there some bargains, but I wouldn't like seriously overweight it, expecting oil is going to run to $100 and you're going to make 40% in a month or two in energy. I think it's more like, okay, find some nice yielding companies that have low costs of production. If I were a U.S. based investor, I'd probably be looking at some of the, you know, foreign producers, Canadian or elsewhere, where you might get a little currency kicker as well. Just sort of, you know, be patient. I mean, I think that it's something that, you know, I don't see oil vaulting to $100 anytime soon. I certainly don't see us going to $20, $30, or even $40. So I don't think that sector is going to get hammered and collapse or anything like we saw back in the COVID days.
What about those renewable sectors then? Look, this whole, we need more energy. There is a mix of energy, and we see a lot of different energy sources continuing to grow. The renewables, though, those have been, in a way, kind of bashed down by the current administration, taking away some of the funding and, quite frankly, just talking negatively about it. You still sound fairly confident that they will be around and they're still here to grow. So where are the opportunities there?
Well, it's funny when you go back and look at how some of these, you know, some of these alternative energy stocks performed historically. They actually, ironically enough, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember we did this as a study for one reason or another. You saw a lot of the solar and some of these other equities do very well in, or do better in the Trump administration than they did during the Biden administration. And part of that was there was just so much, supply and so on, other things being thrown at the renewables market during the Biden administration that, people weren't making as much money and there was a lot of competition and so on. Whereas you kind of had the opposite in Trump 1.0. So I don't think that those kinds of stocks are going to be some kind of disaster just because we're in more of a drill baby drill type environment. If anything, I think there, might be less just sort of bad ideas getting funded in the sector because so much money is being thrown at it that it pressures even the companies that have real business plans and real operations. So I think that, you do have some potential there. I mean, again, though, we all know renewable pricing and renewable companies are going to trade in some way along with traditional energy prices because obviously when, it's all tied somehow to the price of energy. So if oil's not moving or if oil's kind of eh, then you're not going to see much performance in the renewable space either.
What are your thoughts on nuclear power, whether it's powering AI's future with small modular reactors and the nuclear stocks, or uranium just for the power requirements needed for not just the US fleet, but the global fleet?
I'm not a big specialist in that sector, so without it kind of sounding like I'm trying to beg off, I will beg off a little bit and just say, I think that nuclear energy has to be part of the solution. Utility demand driven power demand growth driven by AI and spending is something that a lot of our experts at our events, both live and virtual for Money Show, have talked about. People who do specialize in the sector, whose work I do read and, I think has been right more often than not, and therefore I respect, they're pretty bullish on that space. So I think that as long as that's the case, again, me as a generalist, I think it's intriguing to me, but I couldn't drill down really to the nitty-gritty other than to say the people that are specialists in that part of the market and that are sort of under the Money Show umbrella have been bullish, tend to remain bullish, and I don't have any reason to disagree with them.
Let's also switch focus and talk cryptocurrencies then, because Bitcoin has also been running. As we record this again on Wednesday, today it almost hit $110,000. It's been a very quick rebound. And we had somebody on earlier saying that Bitcoin can also be viewed as a safe haven. But we also hear that Bitcoin also trades in line with tech. How do the cryptocurrencies fare in this environment where you, as you said, need to be selective?
Yeah, it's I'm glad you brought that up because I said it in my opening remarks in my at our recent Miami event last week, and it's been my view that I've brought up before. I like the theoretical story of Bitcoin being an alternative asset, a digital gold, whatever. I mean, on some level, that argument makes sense to me. But I've always also noted, hey, I follow how markets actually trade. And like you just said, Bitcoin has tended to trade like a, tech stock on steroids or the QQQs on steroids. It might. And I say might be breaking that pattern. And one thing that I've said always is I'm open to the idea that this could be another alternative. I don't think it replaces gold. I think, and other safe havens, but I think it could be a complement to them if it can break that, QQQs on steroid type trading pattern. It does seem to be doing that in the shorter term. If that were, I mean, again, today is the day. NASDAQ's down 0.9% as we're talking. Bitcoin just again blew up to or hit a new high before pulling back. Now it's down about 0.3%. If it can show, if that sort of, break of the link can happen and continue, then, I'm all for it joining in the party that gold and silver and some of these other metals are already sort of enjoying. But it's tentative at this point.
Fair enough. Look, I think there is still a lot of question marks out there around this market just because it was a fast crash and a just as fast rebound. And now we're all left, I think, scratching our heads saying, where is the next trend? What is the next trend? And quite frankly, when you have moves that big, it sets up such a big range that simply looking at higher highs, higher lows, lower highs, lower highs might be difficult here because this is just a massive swing that we saw in a matter of 3 months, both down and up. I think it is important to pay attention to those commentators that aren't always on one side of the trade to really get a handle of maybe where the opportunities are, because it does seem like there are a lot of opportunities. But again, what is that next trend is the biggest question. Again, this has been Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, it's always great having you on the show. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Axel Merck.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.